Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, January 13th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 328. There's no guest. It's just me. You just get me in my apartment, slightly give it. I'm pretty much in the out of the woods on this cold that it's not as debilitating. Is it I don't even know if that it's not taking over every pore and a molecule of my body. How about I just say it like that? I'm not destabilized by this cold, but I'm getting over it. I'm out of the woods. I've gone through so many boxes of tissues and slowly getting on the other side of it. And so I'll try not to subject you to too much of my quasi stuffy nose. So this is episode 328, and I am, like I said, in my apartment. I just had a nice breakfast. I had some turkey sausage, some butterball turkey sausage. And I know Black Twitter is not fond of turkey sausage, but it's like it comes in the long pack like Eckrich Farms, but it's turkey sausage and it's uncured and it's really good. I like it. I had some eggs. Some scrambled eggs and some hash browns, like the frozen. I had some leftover from a week ago or something like that. And they turned out to be really good. And really, it really satiates you when you eat a good breakfast. So I had that. I'm going to try not to get the itis while I'm doing this pod. I've got ESPN. Was this NFL countdown on mute? And man, I feel bad for Dak. You know, hashtag black quarterbacks. We got one in. We got Patrick Mahomes. These other games, I don't give a shit about. I think I'm gonna play Tomb Raider for a bit, and then work on a thing for an audition that I have tomorrow. But I don't really care about any of these teams. If they don't have a black quarterback, I don't really care. So, and yeah, I don't. And then the Rooney Rule, all those black coaches got fired. There's a lot of reasons. I was talking to a friend yesterday. There's a lot of reasons if you're black. There's a lot of reasons to not really watch football if you're a black person in America. But I choose to root for the people of color in the positions of power. The quarterback is known, at least around this country, to be one of the most important positions to play in sports. And I'm pulling for Patrick Mahomes. So we lost Dak. The Rams just ran over them, and it just didn't seem like. And their defense, they couldn't really. What did Ezekiel Elliott only had about 50 yards or so, and Gurley and this kid C.J. Armstrong just ran over them, man. It was just. I was out with a buddy, eating. Went to Hooters with a buddy. We were watching a game, and just it was like, oh man, it just looked bad. I don't know. One of the guys, I forget his name, that was, he's an executive and a black dude that used to be an executive, and he's on the, and he's on NFL Countdown. He was just saying, like, who are these guys? Like, they beat up on one team, and then they get their ass beat. He didn't say they get their ass beat, but he was just like, then they get beat by a lesser team, and it's just so much inconsistency that it's, you don't know. But at least they won. Dak won a playoff game. And they made some noise, man. But we'll see. And then what is it? At 1 o'clock, we got the Chargers and the Patriots, and then Philly and New Orleans. Yeah, I do not give a shit about either one of these teams. I guess it would be nice to see the Chargers have Philip Rivers has never beaten Tom Brady, so that would be interesting. But it seems like once you get up on somebody in the playoffs, it just seems like it's over, and like there's no coming back. Like, teams will kind of come back, but then it's just pretty much over. I haven't cared about football in quite some time. And I was talking to my buddy last night. It's just like, when I was younger, I knew all these guys. He still knows. He's like, yeah, this guy went to this school, this guy went to that school. And, you know, if you've listened to my show long enough, you know that I used to love NCAA football. I think that's part of it. I think that's part of the reason why. Not because, maybe, I mean, it goes part and parcel with me not really caring. Like, not caring about college football kind of filters over to the NFL, because you don't know any of the guys really that come over. I kind of know the Heisman winners when black quarterbacks win. Kyler Murray, I don't know if that kid should go. He's gonna be a lot healthier if he plays baseball. It's Kyler Murray, right? Yeah, he's gonna be a lot better if his life will be a lot better. So I just don't want to see him get hurt playing football. And then they say, he's not good enough. He's not good enough. He should be out of the league because he threw an interception, you know? So I don't know. And now I'm getting to the age where a lot of the players that I looked up to as a kid, they're on the other side. All of them pretty much are on the other side. They're media. Like, I'm looking at Randy Moss and Charles Woodson, and they're great. They're great. As media members and commentators and analysts and all that stuff, all those guys are like old now. They're not, you know what I mean? Like, all those dudes are old. Emmitt Smith, one of my favorite shows on the NFL Network, A Football Life, where they go into the player's past and everything, and they, you know, talk about their career. That was cool. I got emotional watching that. like on a Sunday, I think it might have been like a Sunday morning, I was watching it, and he breaks the record and everything. He breaks Walter Payton's record, and Daryl Johnson is there, and Daryl Johnson blocked for him all those years, and like, he started crying. He's like, I wish I could have been on the field with you, man. And Emmitt was crying. It was just like fucking great. That's, I love that shit, man. So that was cool to still, for me to still have those emotions, to still like kind of give a shit about sports. And now, like, the older you get, the more that you see the emperor's wearing no clothes, and then you get sad, and then you think about all this stuff. You have those friends that make you think about all the racist shit and all this, all the negativity that's involved around the shit that you like. Like, those friends that just want to tell you, they always want to tell you how the sausage is made from all the shit that you like. Well, you know, this happened. You're like, fuck, you know, it's just like, the more you know, the more depressed you get. And it's just been a part of my life for so long. And it is kind of sad when you don't connect to stuff, the things that you liked as much as you used to. What I'm really excited about, and I'm guessing it's going to be Black History Month when Doug Williams has his A Football Life. I'm excited about that episode. But Emmitt Smith, that had to be one of the best ones. They did do one with Barry Sanders, because Barry Sanders was talking about Emmitt on this one. Basketball. Maybe once football's done. Now, basketball, I constantly, for the most part, keep up because I watch NBA TV, and, you know, NBA basketball Twitter is just year-round. So that's fun, and I do like that. During the week, I pretty much fall asleep on those basketball games, and I like that. What else in sports? That's about it. Now, if the Chiefs win next weekend and they make it to the Super Bowl, then I'm gonna be super nervous. I'm gonna be nervous. So, I'll be excited about that. What else, guys? I don't want to hold you too long. I'm probably gonna give you a music review. Talk about a little music. Talk about a movie, and then just get the hell out. I did. Obviously, the R. Kelly, surviving R. Kelly, everybody has something to say about it. There's some stuff that I want to save to maybe figure something out for the stage. So I probably won't burn it here. But I was watching and I saw someone that I knew. Shout out to the homie William Kirk. Now, he didn't abuse anybody. He, to my knowledge, he was in there specifically to talk about, on the first episode, the young guy, musician guy, that's like in his 30s, talking. He had a cool, interesting bracelet on his wrist or something, and he was talking about his grandmother, who was R. Kelly's music teacher, and how, like, they were talking about how powerful she was. They were talking about like what she meant to the school and everything like that. And William was talking about his grandmother, and William's grandmother was saying like she was really, R. Kelly was great, he was gifted, and she told him not to be talking about sex stuff and cursing and stuff. So he was there. William Kirk, I know him because when I was living in Chicago, the last show that I did in Chicago was this play called Trouble the Water, which was basically a dramatization of some of the people that were around during that had to live through Hurricane Katrina and stuff like that. And we sung, and it was a musical in some regards, but we didn't have any accompaniment. It was all a cappella. It was pretty cool. And William Kirk, who's this great talent, super talented musician, he was our vocal coach. And he did a lot of arrangements and stuff like that. And so it was really, it was really cool to see him on something like that. And not, you know, he wasn't somebody that was traumatized by R. Kelly, but he is a part of that Chicago community. But what I will say about this R. Kelly thing, we all knew to a certain degree, but I don't think people knew. There was some article that came out maybe 5 years ago that talked about, I don't know if it was in the New Yorker, the New York Times, or it was some publication where it's this long story about how just fucked up things were. And that was even still, that was a thing, you know? And, they just can't seem to get this guy. And I think a lot of the people that were in that documentary, the people that were complicit, not the victims, but the people that were complicit, I think they were trying to get some absolution because it had been weighing on them for so long that they were complicit in letting this guy, you know, get away with all this monstrous shit that he did. And it was just, it was something, man. And I've talked about R. Kelly on here before, but like you just think about how, not like trying to be like, I addressed this already, you guys. A lot of people have talked about, you know, how talented he was and what he meant to music, not just R&B, but to music. He had his imprint on a lot of music. And you think, you're just like, God, this is insane. The one thing that I thought was, No, I'm not. I'm not gonna say it on here. Oh man. All you can eat at Applebee's, guys. What do you think about? I need somebody to weigh in on this. So look, they've got all you can eat riblets, all you can eat shrimp, and all you can eat chicken tenders. I'm watching this commercial. I wonder how good that is. $14.99. You can either get all you can eat riblets, shrimp, or chicken tenders. A lot of people shit on Applebee's, but I think, when was it? I had a gig. I want to say it was probably the summertime. I had a gig in Connecticut and I had left work. I got off work and then I went to the movies. I was like, oh, I'll get something to eat before the movies. And I went to Applebee's. That was like the last time that I went. And I had one of their, had like some chicken dish, like a heart healthy, one of those that had the little flower by it that said, like, you won't die right away if you eat this shit. You know, it's healthy. It was pretty good and it was solid. And I've noticed, like, there have been a couple times when I went to Applebee's, it was like, oh, all right, not bad, you know? I don't know. I just, black Twitter can get in your head sometimes where you think some of these chain restaurants aren't good. But when you don't have any options, and then if you travel, like you're a comic or you're a musician and you do the road, there's going to be certain places that you go. Like the homie JL loves Cheesecake Factory and you can go there, and then NBA players too. Like that's a thing, because you know, if you go somewhere like the Cheesecake Factory, there's a lot of options. You can always get something different, and you know, at least it's going to be consistently good. Like you're going to probably find something that you like on there and you'll get it maybe, you know, when you're in the mood for it. Yeah, but I don't know. I just think black Twitter is too rough on things sometimes when it comes to that, you know? Cause that, when I hung out with my buddy yesterday, last night, I was like, oh man, what do you think? We should just go to Hooters or go to this place? And I was like, we know Hooters is going to be good. So whatever. I do want to react to the Golden Globes. Why don't I react? I'll talk about the Golden Globes since I am a movie guy. Golden Globes. What I was surprised about, I was surprised that Mahershala Ali won for Green Book. I was, I know all the controversy around it. People were mad about it. But I said before, like if you listen to Randolph and I talk about Green Book on the Patreon episode, I believe we did a Patreon for mine and his for Three Guys On and Mundane Festival. But I would say that, you know, it is a good movie. Taking out all the bullshit about about the controversy, whether the son, you know, the way that he wrote the script and Shirley's family not being involved, you know, it's going to come from that perspective. And I mean, there's textbooks that don't have the black perspective in it for decades. There's decades of textbooks that don't have, you know, how black people felt about something or what it was like for people of color during a certain period. But we keep making these movies. They keep making these movies about, oh, where they were different. He was black, he was white, and they still came together despite their differences. America loves that shit because it makes them feel good. It makes them feel good about the schism that they doing to us now. And we keep doing these movies and shit. I'm not going to say that I'd never be in one. You might see me in one, be like, NASA? I don't. But what I liked about this movie, what I liked about Green Book, I thought Viggo Mortensen was great. I thought this was the best that I had ever seen Mahershala Ali. And he'll say, like, there's a really good interview. I think it's Variety that does this series called Actors on Actors. And I think it's like sponsored by Amazon Prime. But if you look up Mahershala Ali, and if you put in YouTube Mahershala Ali and John David Washington, there's this really great interview. It's about 30 or 40 minutes of them talking. And this role for Mahershala Ali was his first really big role, first time he really got to eat. And granted, you're going to see him do his thing on True Detective Season 3, which I'm excited about even more so after, you know, watching this performance. But his performance as Don Shirley is fucking incredible. And technically, it's a lead performance. But, you know, in order, you got to nominate Viggo. So that's how they do it. That's how studios do it, so they can, you know, try to get in so many categories without the two actors having to compete with each other in the same category. But I thought he was incredible, because I went into this movie wanting to hate on it. And I know why all the woke people that I follow, some of the people that have been on the show, that are film critics, and they fucking hated it and they were angry about it. But even there's an interview, I did retweet it earlier this week. If I can find it, it's on my timeline. I'm not tweeting that much these days. I can find it for you. Is this from Scott Feinberg? Let's see. It's from January 8th, and it's from The Hollywood Reporter. How Green Book became one of award season's most contentiously debated films. I don't know who wrote it. This looks like this is just a piece that... Wait a minute. It's like just a piece with, like, reports and stuff. Oh, Scott Feinberg did it. I love Scott Feinberg. He hosts a podcast called Awards Chatter, which is for the most part a weekly podcast, and he does a lot more with actors, and he talks about their career. If like Sam Elliott is the latest one on the feed, and he's talking about his life and career, and obviously he'll get into A Star Is Born. I didn't finish it yet, but it's a good read, and it is on my timeline. And you can read it, and it's good. It just talked about, like, a lot of people, you know, how the family felt left out, how Octavia Spencer, who was a producer on the film, said that, you know, a lot of the movies she's done in this time period, there were no black characters with agency, who, you know, like the Don Shirley character, where it wasn't like they needed white people to, I mean, he needed Tony Lip in this movie to protect him. But this was a man of stature. He was this guy, you know, it didn't say it in the film, but he knew Martin Luther King. He knew Kennedy. He was a doctor. You know, he had his PhD. He's a really smart, refined dude. They did say some of the, this is like pretty much the last part of the, let's see, hold on, let's see what we got here. I'm trying to find this sentence here. So here we go. This is the last part of this article I'm going to read to you. So it remains to be seen how the new Academy will respond to a film like Green Book. In the meantime, even Shirley's relatives, who take issue with the film, are pulling for Ali, who called them in November to apologize for not reaching out sooner, saying he was unaware that close relatives of Shirley were still living. Yvonne Shirley, contacted in the aftermath of the Golden Globes, tells THR, "We're glad he won." And so, I mean, if you have that blessing that, you know, that they're glad that he won, then really, that's kind of all you need if you're rooting for Mahershala Ali. And I'm like, okay, I can take solace in that. And I understand how stuff gets made. This isn't the first time something like this has happened, but it's just the first time that more people, one of the first instances where more people who have a voice are now speaking up about this. And it's a great thing. And I hope that makes people who are writing these films stuff that's based on a true story, I'm hoping that they do it with more accuracy. And then the guy that wrote it was saying something about Muslims, and he had to apologize for that. So it'll be interesting if it gets through, if we get through February, then we get to the Oscars, and this film still wins something. My thing is, I'm kind of rooting like Mahershala, black actors, you know what I'm saying? But I kind of want Richard E. Grant. I was pulling for Richard E. Grant to win because best supporting actor for Can You Ever Forgive Me, because I'm in that joint. You know what I'm saying? So it would be good to say I'm a part of an Oscar nominated film, Oscar winning film. But I'm thinking Melissa McCarthy, but I don't know. It just seems like that's because maybe like that movie was and I haven't said that much about the movie, just that I really liked it. And I think that Grant and McCarthy were great, and I hope they win. Let me see. Let's look into this. It'd be nice if I could look at a definitive. Okay, here we go. So the Americans won. I was trying to do, I'll do movies too. I'll do TV too. The Americans won best drama. Well deserved. I mean, they've been good for a long time, so you had to give them something for their last season. Olivia Colman won for The Favorite, which is fine. She was great. Glenn Close. That was a surprise, I think, because the wife came out. The wife came out like late summer, early fall, and I had not heard. I think that came out maybe like August, September, and I remember I was like, do I want to see that? I don't even know what it's about, but I heard it's got good reviews, and I got sent the screener maybe a week or two ago, and I was like, oh, this is good. I see why she won, but I'm interested in seeing what comes of what the nominations will bring. And then I'll narrow down what I think's going to happen. Christian Bale won for Vice. Didn't have a problem with that. I just like the Golden Globes are split up in these categories where it's like, yeah, you won out of this little category, but then you really just want to see how all this coalesces into these Oscar nominations, which are not going to... Yeah, anyway, yeah. And Mahershala won, obviously. Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody. To me, that was one of the most compelling male performances that I've seen this year. I thought it was great. And again, this movie had folks talked about the historical and inaccuracies regarding this movie, but I thought that performance was really good. I thought that was great. Regina King, who, if Bill Street could talk, if you're going to give an acting award in that film, that's who you would give it to. She was terrific, and she's been killing it for a long time. I think she's going to win. I would be surprised if anybody else won, beat her in that category. I'm just kind of going through this stuff. Bohemian Rhapsody drama. No. As someone who's listed, if Bill Street could talk, as the best film of 2018, no. I'm hoping that the drama with Green Book, I'm hoping that Beale Street can get more love and when it comes Oscar time. Shallow won an award. Yeah, I just wasn't. One of the surprising things was that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Feature Film at the Golden Globes. That was surprising because I thought, you know, Disney, Pixar always gets that. So Spider-Verse, that jump, it was good. I really dug it. I liked it. I'm not mad at that at all. Roma, Best Foreign Language Film. Roma was good. Like we said in the JL and Jeff and I were saying, you know, it kind of started off a little slow, but it was really, this is a terrific film. I did not watch the Comiskey Method. Michael Douglas won for that. A Star is Born didn't really get anything except that Best Original Song, I believe. But I think the Oscars will take care of that. I don't see anything really sweeping. Yeah, the Golden Globes, I didn't watch it that much. I just kind of, I did see Regina King win. I looked at Mahershala on the YouTubes, his press conference and stuff. Yeah. Golden Globes. What else, guys? What else did I want to talk about? There's other things. How long have I been blabbing to you guys? Half hour. Hold on a second. Okay, so I'm back. And I thought that I was talking to you guys for about 20 minutes, but I was not. And I feel like a total idiot. For 6 years, I've been doing this show almost, and I forgot to unpause the conversation. So what happened was my mother called me, and I talked to her because I'm a good son. And then I started, when we left off, I was talking about the Golden Globes. So what I will say is, and it was podcast gold what I was giving you, or so I thought. But what I'll say about the Golden Globes, I'll just say the drama with Green Book, I hope that gives, if Beale Street Could Talk, a bigger avenue to get through. My fear is that Barry Jenkins is so good that people kind of will tend, like, it's like LeBron James and Michael Jordan. Like, you want to try to give the MVP, you want to try to give all the awards to somebody else so somebody else can have a chance, you know? And I don't think that's always fair, you know? So we will see what happens. I just say off the rip, I'm rooting for, as far as the Oscars are concerned, I'm rooting for Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant for obvious reasons. If Mahershala gets through that Best Supporting Actor, I'm not going to be mad at that at all. Hoping that Mariel Heller gets nominated for Best Director. I hope you didn't hear my neighbors walking through, whatever. I heard it, but I hope you didn't hear it. So I'm rooting for her, rooting for, you know, all the awards that Can You Ever Forgive Me is can get. It was cool to be a part of it, and for my first movie to be involved in something of that stature, and to say I was a part of an Oscar-nominated, Oscar-winning film, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, just rooting for that, and that's really that's about it. Everything else would just be cool. Music. Okay, so I went on this great musical rant. I'll see if I can recapture it, but I was listening to, so you guys are gonna laugh at me or gonna make fun of me, but I like this girl, Hailee Steinfeld. She's an up and coming white starlet that I'm excited about her work. Ever since she was a girl from the True Grit remake, and she's good in that. She's good in the Edge of 17 stuff she's gotten to carry, and she's in Bumblebee now. And I didn't know that she was a pop singer, and I kind of had that, like, she was in those excuse me, those Pitch Perfect movies, the last two. And I'm like, okay, she's singing or whatever. But one time I saw her on the Tonight Show, and I was like, oh, okay, she was singing her one of her Bumblebee songs. It was one of her. She has one of the I guess the song that comes on in the closing credits of Bumblebee, and I was like, okay, this sounds pretty good. And I listened to the joint on Tidal. I was like, okay, I kind of like. So I kind of want to listen to more of her stuff, but I am so sorry, you guys. I need to take a Claritin. But so I was listening to that. And, you know, sometimes when you listen to music on Tidal or whatever, there'll be like-minded shit that'll come up, like stuff like these pop songs from some dude named Avicii. And he's singing with these, he's a DJ, and there's other people singing on his tracks. And I'm like, oh, this sounds pretty good. And then some dude named Zed, I've heard of him because he did, I think Selena Gomez did something with him like a long time ago. They were dating or whatever, who cares. And then, some of these singers are pretty good. And you're just like, oh, that shit does sound good. Like, when it just catches you off guard, this girl, Maren Morris, she's like, why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm like, okay, that sounds pretty good. So, because normally for me, it's just like hip-hop shit. And I know I listen to, like, S.G. Lewis and some of these, like, I don't know, like, these producers that make these instrumentals, and they do sound good. So I'm trying to expand what I listen to. And I even think, like, I've said this, I said this 6 years ago, that I heard Ariana Grande sing, like, I don't know, like on YouTube or somewhere. And I was like, oh, this girl's good. You know, like she's dope. And I know, like, she's gotten the, dating these guys and all this stuff, but like even before all that shit, I thought she was a good singer. I remember when I was in San Francisco, I bought her first album when I was at like Amoeba Records. I was like, oh, I like that girl, I'm gonna listen to her shit. And she got some good jams. She's got quite a few on this new one, the joint that she's got with I think the second record that she's got with Pharrell is dope. So I think she's a good singer, man, whatever. But so that I was kind of listening to that. Crit has a new album called like TDT or something, but he's been releasing these projects with like a couple tracks. And I think now the like Spotify and Tidal have made it like one thing. So I think it's like a total of 8 songs, and that's good. Like Crit can rap, you know, he's been doing it for a long time. He's dope. But I wanted to say that, I think it was earlier this week, one of my favorite singers, this dude named Van Hunt, who is a singer-songwriter, he is going to be doing this mini tour in March. But it's all in D.C. and Maryland. He's doing like 3 dates, the 15th, the 16th, and the 17th. And he's going to be like with this guy, Nate Smith. Let me see. Let me get this because I'm going to just. Mm-hmm. Nate Smith plus Ken Folk with special guest Van Hunt, Saturday, March 16th. And that's at the Kennedy Center. Oh, my God. And the Stoltz, this place called the Creative Alliance on the 17th, on St. Patrick's Day in Baltimore. And then he's doing this venue where some of my buddies, like your the homie Randolph Terrence, Andy Klein, the Avalon Theater in the Stoltz Listening Room in Easton, Maryland. And I saw this, like I saw him tweet this, and because I follow him and he follows me back because he's a cool dude. And I was like, man, initially I had texted Randolph. I was like, hey, you should take the missus to go see Van Hunt. It would be a good show. And he's like, what? I was like, yeah, you should take her. What? But then I was like, man, that would be kind of dope to go to Easton. And I was like, if I went, I could go get off work, go down there, go see the show, get a hotel, and then Saturday, the next day, go see my parents. Because it's only like an hour, maybe hour or two from my parents' house. And another guy had hit me up, like a friend, Facebook friend hit me up. He's like, oh, Chris, I know you like Van Hunt, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, I know about it. And he's like, yeah, you know, the Eastern Maryland show only has like, it's a small room and they only have like 30 tickets left or something. I went on the website. I was like, fuck, man. So I got a ticket. I was like, you know what? Weather permitting, showbiz permitting, I'm going to go and see that show. Because I want to make more of the attempt to go see, if I can afford it, to see more live shows if I can. And because I always enjoy doing that. But Van Hunt's one of my favorite artists. I know you hear me say that shit. I don't say it. I don't throw it around. I don't throw it around too much. I would say that his album, his second album, On the Jungle Floor, is a Desert Island album. I would have to have that album because it's got two of my... my all-time favorite song. Sidebar. So NFL Countdown is on mute and they're talking about Kyler Murray's draft decision. And they're talking about whether, I'm assuming they're talking about whether he should play or not. And they got his stats and all that shit up there. And they're like, should he do it? Blah, blah, blah. I hope he plays baseball. I don't know. I got to get Felder back on here to talk about this shit. So, I mean, Van Hunt's great. I found out about him in maybe like 2002 when... I was working at Best Buy when I was in grad school in Chicago. And I read something about him, like opening for Alicia Keys. It was like something in like Entertainment Weekly or something like that. And I was like, oh, this guy seems cool. And when I was working at Best Buy, I used to get the discounts. I bought his album for like $6. And I was immediately taken away. Like, really took a liking to Dust. Quite a few of his songs on there were, like, really great. And he had, like, kind of like a Curtis Mayfield delivery on some of his records. And he's really dope. And I was like, oh, this guy's good. And then a couple years later, he comes out with On the Jungle Floor. And I was like, fuck, he, like, blew me away. And prior to that, because he's a singer-songwriter, and he wrote Hopeless, the record that is featured on the Love Jones soundtrack that Dion Ferris sings, and he wrote that. He's, you know, the joints is like, when Love Jones first comes on, I believe, it's like the record that's like, boo, 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 hello, morning, you know, that joint. They say I'm hopeless, like a penny with a hole in it, penny with a hole in it, yeah, yeah. Oh my God, that's a great record. So he wrote that song, and he's got like, and his third album which is like released now, but it was like a bootleg. It became a bootleg because he left. He did his first two albums with Capitol Records, and then he went over to Blue Note. And I thought, and at the time, me and my best friend since first grade, we were excited because it was like, okay, so Capitol, you know, he's dope. You and I know he's dope, and the people that like him or whatever. But like Blue Note, we're thinking because Norah Jones blew up, we're thinking like maybe that's more exposure. But Blue Note shelved it. And so, and he had like, and then he just kind of took some time off. And I guess, and he was like touring and stuff, obviously still writing and everything like that. But I'm on his website now, and he's just got like Popular is out now, you know, like his shit is like, it's out, released properly. Oh, he's got something. Oh, he's got. Because he says, okay, albums and bootlegs. Music is available for streaming only. A lot of his stuff is on like Tidal, and I'm assuming like Spotify. He's got a section called Bootlegs. Oxbone Purse. Anyway, yeah, I gotta get into more of that shit, but like, he's fantastic. I love his stuff, and I'll say like the best interview that I've heard is this interview that he did on a podcast called Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard, and it was great. And I would say like Dax Shepard's cool because if I was as famous as Dax Shepard, I would probably do the same thing that he's done. Like I would try to get some of my favorite people that I really like to get them on the podcast and use my notoriety to do that. What's been cool about doing this show, I've actually had that happen. Obviously, you know, Fonte's been on the show several times. Nicolay, Sky Zoo, dude like JB, like just like, you know, like quite a few really cool people have of note, you know. Obviously, a lot of comedians that I've had on the show have been terrific podcasts. Some of my favorite episodes have been with people that aren't famous. They probably will be one day, you know, but they have been really great sharing their stories. But you know what I mean? When you have it, when you can nerd out talking to, you know, one of your favorite artists, it's so dope to me. And so I feel like that's how he approached that interview with Van Hunt. And so when Van Hunt was on this Armchair Expert, he did two songs, and he did acoustic versions of Dust, which is pretty much his, I would say kind of like his debut single. That's like the first record that, because he did a video for it or whatever. And then that was off his first album, self-titled joint. And then he did Being a Girl, which is, I've said, you know, like Van Hunt probably has two of the consummate Chris Lamberth like songs that kind of like that are about my love life. This record called Hot Stage Lights and Being a Girl, like those two songs, probably that those are two of my favorite records that he's done. And and he does these songs, and I think it might have been after Being a Girl. After one of the records, if you listen to the podcast, like you can hear Dax Shepard crying, like choking up, because he's so moved by this dude. And I'm thinking because these three shows that he's doing in March, because they're relatively small venues, I think he's most likely gonna do an acoustic set. And my good friend, he was telling me, you know, because he lived in Atlanta for a long time, and he used to see all these artists coming through. And I don't know if Van Hunt was based in Atlanta for a while, but he would perform in Atlanta a lot. And he would just tell me how dope Van Hunt is when he's like by himself, and just with a guitar. And I think like you've heard me talk about this on the show before. I think most singers. Excuse me, most singer-songwriters, when they're just kind of by themselves with the guitar or whatever, like Rachel Yamagata when I saw her up in Pawling, New York. It's just more intimate. It's just more compelling to me. That's just a vibe thing that I like. But I'm looking forward to it. I hope I can make it down there to see that show, because I did buy my ticket and I hope things work out for me to go see him. Because I don't know if I had said this on the part that didn't get recorded, but I'll say it again. Fuck it. 2007, I saw him with his band when he was touring on the Jungle Floor. And I believe at the time they had opened for someone at the Chicago Theater, and then they did like a small venue with his band and they fucking rocked out. And I went to see it. I met him after the show briefly, got to like shake his hand and whatever, dap him up. And that was great. And then when I had moved here in 07, or like later in the year, he might have been performing somewhere like maybe like a year or two later. And it was some restaurant in like somewhere here in Bergen County where it was maybe 15 minutes from where I lived. He was doing a show and I didn't get to see it. And it was just at this really small location, this is small restaurant bar where I eventually took a date there once, and it was a really cool spot, but it was just like, why is he performing there? But I missed out on seeing him there. So I'm hoping I can catch him there, 'cause he's really great. And if you haven't heard of his stuff, I mean, I think you'll like him. I highly recommend Van Hunt. He's awesome. I thought that I was going to talk about something else. Now I don't know if I mentioned this. No, I didn't. I was talking about how Naughty Dog is constantly teasing The Last of Us fans by everybody's posting these like cryptic videos and all this stuff every time. 'Cause I have a Google alert for The Last of Us Part 2. So once a week, every day I'll get like somebody posting something. So one of the writers, Haley Gross, posted on her Instagram that she had been, she's going to be in the video game. She's actually going to be in the game. And it was a picture of her being motion captured and all this stuff. And it leads a lot of people to believe that, have they finished fucking filming this game? Have they actually finished it? Or did they just tell her, hey, it's okay for you to put this video out. It's okay for you to put these pictures out. So we don't actually know, but they're constantly teasing us. And I don't know if I said this in the one, but whatever. This is just going to be a crazy ass episode, because I thought I was talking to you guys for a half an hour and I wasn't. So this has been like, so we were going on like 53 minutes. All right. So we'll wrap it up. I'm super excited. I hope it gets released this year. And that's my Last of Us update. I need to play Tomb Raider, which I should probably play, some today. And, yeah, so that's that. Go listen to Van Hunt. Listen to his music. And if you live in the area, if you live in one of those Baltimore, D.C., or Easton, go see that man. He's a fucking beast. Okay, I want to talk about The Upside. I saw The Upside with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston. The controversy around this movie. I see where people are saying, oh, Paul Feig wrote the screenplay. Oh, I didn't know that. The Guardian says a mediocre remake. Variety says The Upside, likely to become STX Films' first number one debut. Variety, Upside set. So that's Variety said that. Upside set to be STX's first number one opener with 19 plus million. Aquaman flips over at 1 billion. Let's see what I'm gonna look at. Let me just read this shit first. All right, then we'll talk about it. I'll read the Google blurb. Here we go. Philip is a wealthy quadriplegic who needs a caretaker to help him with his day-to-day routine in his New York City penthouse. He decides to hire Dell, a struggling parolee who's trying to reconnect with his ex and his young son. Despite coming from two different worlds, an unlikely friendship starts to blossom as Dell and Philip rediscover the joy of living life to the fullest. This movie was directed by Neil Berger and screenplay by Paul Feig, which was adapted from the film The Untouchables, which came out in 2011. And this movie had been done for quite some time, at least like a year or so ago. And I was wondering what was happening to it. And it kind of got put on the shelf for a bit. And now it got released in January. And people are saying, oh, no, January. It's kind of a dead zone for movies. It's going to be bad. I went to see this joint. It's 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, 44% on Metacritic. The joint was all right. I thought it was fine. They were saying, oh, it's a serious movie for Kevin Hart. Most comedians, if you can act, you can do drama. If you know what I mean? Like Kevin Hart, to me, is a good actor. So it's not really surprising to see him take on a role like this, to where I thought, like, okay, this is a solid movie. There's some heartwarming parts. The parts that were supposed to be sentimental, I was just like, okay, yeah. And obviously Bryan Cranston is Bryan Cranston, a terrific actor. And Nicole Kidman's great in a role that you don't normally see her do, you know? Like a support. She does supporting work, but, you know, after seeing her in The Destroyer, I mean, she's such a great actor. She's such a fucking, like, chameleon that I literally forgot that I saw her 2 weeks prior as a, you know, badass cop and detective in The Destroyer. In Destroyer. I think some people say it's The Destroyer. Anyway, it was good. It's kind of long. It's a little long, 2 hours and 6 minutes. They could have shaved a little bit. But overall, I dug it, man. It's a satisfying watch. It's not something that you have to run out and go see. But what was interesting to me was the fact that, you know, I have the AMC, mobile app. And yeah, this movie's the number one movie in the country right now, young. So I guess a lot of people. Oh my God. So I guess a lot of people did not care about what Kevin Hart said, the homophobic tweet that he had 10 years ago, or they didn't care that Bryan Cranston was an able-bodied man who was playing someone who was disabled. There was some backlash. I read this shit and I was like, what the fuck are you talking? People were upset. Some people were upset that Bryan Cranston had this role that he had playing a quadriplegic, and they didn't give the role to someone who was quadriplegic. And I saw this piece that Trevor Noah did on The Daily Show, where it's just kind of like in between commercial break, Trevor Noah talks to the audience. You know, he's kind of like shooting the shit with them. And he's actually providing like interesting commentary. And he was talking about the controversy around Bryan Cranston playing this role. He's like, you know, and I think he said it right when he said, he's like, you know, if you kind of, you get it, he's an actor and this is a movie and people act. And, you know, if you get a person that, you know, then it kind of becomes a documentary if the person, you know, is, you know, disabled. And then he had something that he said was something that was pretty heartfelt about a person who was an actor who was disabled. And I was thinking like, oh, you know, he could this guy do the role? And it's like, I don't know, man. It's like everybody's voice should be heard, but this is a movie. And actors act. And at the same time, are you as good as of an actor as Bryan Cranston, who's arguably one of the greatest American actors that we've ever had? I don't know, but you can really split hairs on this, but I think actors act, and it's not like Scarlett Johansson, you know, playing an Asian woman, or Emma Stone playing an Asian character. It's not as blatant as that. I think, should there be more opportunities for other actors? Yeah. But fucking show business is hard, man. If you've listened to this podcast and know, like, I mean, like, what you look, I think really there's a part out there for everybody for the most part. It's about getting the opportunity to show what you can do. And I think, like I talked about earlier, about Mahershala Ali getting to show what he could finally do once he broke through with, you know, this guy has been getting small parts here and there, getting parts, doing his thing, but he never really got to eat. He never really got to eat like that. I mean, he was in Moonlight for like 10 or 15 minutes, but he ain't never got to eat until he did Green Book. And when you see somebody like, shit, I've been acting since I was 12 years old, and I just now started booking shit. And like, I just joined the union in 2017, and I'm fucking great. I'm great at what I do. And I got an audition for something tomorrow where it's like a handful of lines. Do you think I want that shit? You motherfucking right that I want to get that part. Because you keep getting these parts and you keep doing your thing. It's just, but you can't be mad at somebody that's already eating like that. You can't, I don't know, man. It's like people shitting on stuff. Everybody's complaining. Don't see the movie, but this movie, number one movie in the country, which is really surprising off of what's been going on with the and I'm doing air quotes, the controversy with Bryan Cranston being in this movie. This motherfucker saw The Bone Collector, where Denzel was playing a guy that couldn't move. But he's Denzel. You're going to want to watch him for 2 hours in that shit. And Angelina Jolie looking all fine and helping stop crime. You know what I'm talking about. I think in some instances we've gone too far. And the controversy with Kevin Hart and the Oscars. If you want to get a good interview of that, I would say listen to him and Terry Gross on Fresh Air, which is actually mostly everybody was like, why won't you apologize, Kevin? You didn't do it like everybody wanted you to. It was a little bit of that. With the Fresh Air joint, but Terry Gross is one of the best broadcasters that ever lived. So it was a good interview. It was actually very good. If you don't want to see any superheroes, I mean, you could see the upside. And I think this is one of those movies where if you did wait till Redbox or you did wait till it was streaming, you'd watch the movie and you'd be like, all right. But what I will say, this is just as much about black fatherhood than it's just, how do you say it? I should be better with these words. With my words, it's just as good when it comes to the subject of black fatherhood. It's just as good as the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I would say. Black dads trying to do better. Yeah, it's good. It's a solid movie. And I actually did enjoy. What I didn't enjoy was the fact that, okay, I went to this movie theater in Ridgefield, New Jersey, the Starplex AMC. I get my ticket. And I get my ticket so that I'm like not sitting it near anybody. And I go there, there's a middle aged, there's an old white guy sitting in my seat. I was like, sir, I think you're in my seat. And he's like, oh, I'm just going to sit here till so I can look at, do my crossword puzzle until the light movie starts. And I was like, all right, man. But then I didn't want to look like an asshole sitting in a seat that I didn't buy. And then other people that probably bought the seat come in and I'm looking like an asshole. But they're not going to say anything to me because they don't want any conflict because I'm big and black. But I still feel like an asshole because I'm a halfway decent person. And granted, there was a couple that bought tickets to sit next to me. And I know that they did because I looked at my app and saw that there were two seats that were taken. So that whole row, that the row of three would have been myself and those two people. But since they were scared and a little racist, they just sat somewhere else. They went and got their popcorn. That guy was out of his seat, and I still had my seats by myself. But I just don't like when people do that shit, man, because it's not right. So people just don't pay attention to those, to the seating charts. It's like, yo, you bought a ticket. Sit your ass where you paid for your seat to be. If you paid for G1, you sit your ass in G1, and that's it. You know what I mean? I don't like going, and I know that this movie, and I could tell that this movie was doing well because I was looking at all the theaters near me. Like, there's quite a few that's like in my general region. I was going to see where I was going to go check this movie out. I was like, do I want to see it after work? Am I going to be too tired? I was like, just wait till Saturday. And I was looking at the times, and all the seats were getting filled up. And I was like, people are going to see this movie because they like Kevin Hart and they like Bryan Cranston. And I think it's more so along the lines of them liking Kevin Hart, to be honest with you. But everybody was going to see this. And how about that? Number one movie in the country. Wow. That's pretty big. Aquaman's not that good. It's not very good. And a lot of these other movies have just been out since. Like, nobody, like, everybody that wanted to see Bohemian Rhapsody, like, all the movies, like, On the Basis of Sex, Escape Room, which I heard was pretty good, that I will eventually see, A Dog's Way Home. It's surprising that, like, a grown-up movie, you know, like, one of those, you know, it's a January movie coming out and doing numbers like that. That's impressive. I don't know. Glass should be the movie that, you know, that dominates this month, but we'll see. I did see that movie, and Glass got 38%. I think I saw it, and I guess I'll talk about it maybe next week or so, and we'll see what happens. Guys, I think that's it. I think you've had enough of me. I've had enough of me. So thanks, everybody, for listening. That's the end of the show. I will talk to you next time. Peace. Talk to